Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan, and I am an alcoholic.
Good morning.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Right. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs out that way. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from any unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9, part 1. Please welcome our panel, Patrick and Will. Alright, I will read the first paragraph on page 76, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Alright, steps 8 and 9, which we used to have it written on here, which is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Now, we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol.
Whichever one of y'all wants to go first? Patrick, Will?
No, you go. Just kidding.
My name is Patrick Lanier. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Patrick.
My sobriety date's May 1st, 2009. All right, so what do I got for experience with this? All right, so when I got sober, I remember, you know, going through the steps, going through 4 and 5, and then doing 6 and 7, and then I get to 8. And me and my sponsor, we really didn't talk about it. And so I start going around to meetings in Chesapeake asking people's advice. And I remember someone that used to have a lot of time told me, you know, you need to start writing a list. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, and I'm like, what's going to be on this list? And he's like, well, you know, all the people that you've wronged. And I'm like, all right. So I got out this notebook and I started to write this list. And then I told my sponsor about this list I was writing. And he's like, why are you writing a list? I'm like, I don't know. Someone told me at a meeting that that's how I start step eight. And he said, you know, do they read the book? And I said, I imagine. I think they got like 20 years sobriety. He said, well, it tells you at step eight that we already made that list. And, you know, that always makes me think, like, these steps are so, like, magically written. Like, if I was to do step eight when I'm, like, at step three, I would have no understanding. But luckily, when I go through four and five, you know, there's some delusions that are smashed, and I start to see things a lot different. For me, in four and five, like, my parents came up on that, my sister, a lot of people that like loved me a lot for some reason ended up there. And when they ended up there, I thought it was logical that they deserved to be there. But then as I go through all my columns, I see that, you know, it was self. It was me being selfish, me not getting my way, me not getting my needs met. And so then as he told me, you know, those are the amends I'm gonna make that I may pad on my resentment list. And so with that, you know, and it does say here that, like, it was agreed that I'd go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So then me and him started to have the talk. We started having the talk about how we were going to make these amends. And I guess I'm going to leave it there because there really isn't a lot to do with it. Thanks.
My name is Will Cheney. I'm an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is July 27th, 2009. I have a sponsor. I sponsor other men. I have a home group, Friends of Bill W. in Suffolk. We meet Thursdays at noon and 8, two book studies. And I've been involved in the AA service structure. And currently basking in the warm glow of the spirit of rotation for the past 9 months. And I'm going to start with that last sentence. You know, the part that I did really well was get ready. Got ready to be willing to go to any lengths. I did the drinking part really well. And the drinking part was really still working for me at the end. And man, I started that last 3-day binge. I had no intention of ever putting alcohol away. I was just gonna go on until my life ran out. And something happened over that weekend. I once again experienced that state of being our book calls pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. And once again, I did my best to drink it away. I started drinking at 7 in the morning on the last day of that binge. And I don't remember much more about that day. I remember the first drink, and that's about it. And next day when I woke up, I just knew I was done. And that brought me to the point of surrender. And it just came naturally, and slumped on the sofa in the dark at 3 in the morning. I just looked upward, and a weak voice said, God, please help me. And in that moment, I conceded to my innermost self I was an alcoholic. And I'd done steps 1 and 2 without even knowing it, and made a beginning on 3. And God, in that moment, remove the obsession, the desire to drink. And I would not have been as sustainable had I not come to Alcoholics Anonymous and got the help that I asked for. And God put a sponsor in my life who began to spoon feed me the one spoonful at a time, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was very firm but loving. And when he asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths, I said yes. Now that doesn't mean, as he guided me to do the things, I became the intergroup rep at like 3 months from my home group, that I wasn't fearful. I was. I was fearful, and I was lazy, and I was reluctant, and I didn't feel qualified to do many of the things he guided me to do. But I did them. And so it was with his guidance that as I approached and started on the eighth step, He had me on the right track. He had me living in the moment. But unfortunately, at that moment, I was still very fearful and had a sense of dread about an upcoming family reunion in South Florida. And I just wished I would die. I was doing everything my sponsor asked of me, and I wished I would die. And I never had the wherewithal to make that happen. That was part of God's plan. Thank you.
All right. Continuing on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have heard. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to be branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. But our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He is going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill rather than our talk of spiritual discoveries.
All right. Yeah. That's great. For me, like, I don't know, put myself in someone's shoes, you know? Like, if someone came to me with some of the injustices that I've committed and started telling me that I found God or Jesus, I wouldn't be too stoked about that, really. And actually, when I think back over my amends, never once did I ever was like, hey, man, it's good, dude, I got God now. Like, for me, it was, I'm wrong, and that's something I've never done. There's always been sorry. And there's never been a time where I own what I've done. And like I say, you know, I'm wrong. And I think back, you know, I said that I didn't make any amends till step eight, but I did. Will reminded me of that. I was writing out my fourth step, and my sister came from Mississippi to spend like a week with my dad. And she was in the living room, and whenever me and her were in the same room, the temperature would drop, I swear to God, by like 5 degrees. She couldn't stand me. She hated me. I was a piece of shit. That's how she looked at me, and she had all rights to look at me like that. And so there I am in the same room with her, temperature's dropping, and I've never owned any of that before. And I said to her, I said, yo, can I talk to you outside for a second? And she's like, I guess, yeah. And she lit up her Marlboro light, and she's just standing there looking at me. And I'm like, you know, what I did to our dad was wrong. For years, I've just screwed him over. I've wasted his time, his money, his resources. I've been a terrible son. I've definitely been a terrible brother. And I don't know what's going on. I don't know how this is going to end, but I'm trying something new. And like that automatically, like, totally changed the dynamics of that relationship. That was in October, and in December, she was asking me if I'd come to Mississippi to spend Christmas with her. I was on pretrial and probation, on a felony probation, so I didn't get to go to Mississippi. But it was really sweet that she asked me, you know? And that was the magic of it, you know? Because, like, things like that never started to happen. And luckily, these things started to happen in my life quickly, too. You know, I started getting quick results from this. It wasn't a long, drawn-out process, you know? My sobriety date's May 1st, and on October, I'm repairing a relationship with my sister. But to get back to, you know, this is that, I just can't, I've never done that. It's always been, you know, I'm wrong. It's not even like, it's never been like, I'm an alcoholic. You know, like, it's never been that. It's just, I finally in my life claim what I did, and I said I was wrong, and how can I make it up to you? And I'm going to leave it on that one.
So I sat down with my sponsor with my list, and on it I had all of those people in the resentment column from the four-step. I also had a lot of my dear loved ones that had not abandoned me. And yeah, I didn't have a resentment against them, but I just wanted to make it right in my behavior and thank them for not abandoning me. And so I set out on my journey to South Florida, where I'd be making my first amends and attending the family reunion. And it rained all the way down, and I stayed in a hotel room in Brunswick, Georgia. And I was right at 9 months. And as I did every morning, I was on my knees at 6:30 in the hotel room. And I've been praying for God to lift the veil of depression so that I might continue to be of service to others. And in that moment, I was able to thank God for having lifted the veil of depression. And the tears of joy began to run down my face. The weight had been lifted. And I walked outside, and the sun hit my face after all the rain on the way down. And I couldn't help but singing that one-hit wonder, "I can see clearly now, the rain is gone." And I still get chills every time I hear that song. And thus, I stepped into the sunlight of the Spirit in an instant. And when I talked to my sponsor, he said, "Will, you're having a spiritual blizzard of experiences." And so I believe God worked in my life to help me to make those first amends to my family. He took that weight off of me. And I'm so grateful, because it just happened, and my sponsor had given me a script, and this was a very important part of it for me. And I stuck to the script, and the script pretty much said, "As a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I now realize the harm I caused you, and please tell me what I can do to make it right. Just keep it simple." And my mother smiled at me, and she was suffering with an illness and had become incapacitated. And she said, "Will, can you go say that same thing to your stepfather?" I said, "I can do that, Mom." That woman had always shown me unconditional love and never said a word about my drinking or my poor behavior. And I finally had understood what she was about and was able to just begin to do the same. And I went to my stepfather, and I went to my older brother the next day, and I made those amends, and I was on my way with the ninth step. And when I read this earlier in preparation, I consider myself a bit of a wordsmith. I do crossword puzzles and an online Scrabble game, but I had to look up the word diffident. And, you know, that means doubtful and lacking self-confidence. And there were some names on there that brought that sense of insecurity on. But I did the work. And I just took them one at a time. And I can see now how it has affected me through the leveling of the pride to help me to be of maximum service to those here in Alcoholics Anonymous and out in the world. It's my reason for being put on this planet, is to help other alcoholics. What a wonderful thing to have a purpose in my life, finally. Thank you.
All right. The next reading is on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be he has done us more harm than we have done him, and though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, We are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feelings and expressing our regret.
All right. So when I got sober, I had some pretty big court issues. This makes me think of this, even though there's a couple examples. But all right. So I flipped my car into some guy's yard, and he showed up to court, and he kept showing up to court. And so I'm starting off this, you know, starting out these steps, and when I see him, I'm like, look at this rat bastard, dude. He ain't got nothing better to do than just show up and, like, just you go and testify against me. Like, dude, all I did was, like, mess up your dirt, bro. Come on now. And that's really how I felt. And then I get another continuance, and I'm like, oh, there he is again. I guess this guy doesn't even work, dude. What's he on, welfare? Like, come on, you rat bastard. Like, and these are the thoughts, and as I'm going through these steps, you know, I got a lot of continuances. He missed a lot of work. But so then, you know, I'm going through these steps and I get to step 9. And I know I owe this guy an amends. And I don't want to do it. I do not want to do it. And so I remember there was this kid named Sean that I got sober with. And we were driving back from Norfolk, and for some reason I told him myself, and I'm like, dude, we're gonna drive by this house that I drive by every day. I gotta make amends to this guy. And Sean's like, really? And it's like 9:30 at night, and he's like, really? And I'm like, yeah, I haven't done it. I don't wanna do it. And he's like, oh, well, no time's better than now. Woo! Right into the driveway. And I'm like, oh shit, oh my, why did I say anything? Like, why did I say anything? He's like, come on, man, you can do it. You can do it. And he's like, oh, he's all amped up because he's not the one that's got to walk to that front door. And I'm like, all right. I get out of the car and I'm like, oh, this is such a bad idea. 9:30 at night. This guy missed at least 7 days of work. I don't really know the final tally, but I know it was at least that. And so I knock on the door. I knock all softly. I'm like, all right, I gotta do this. I knock harder, and the light goes on, and he comes out, and he sees me, and he opens the door, and we go down the stairs, and we're standing in the exact spot where my car flipped over. It was probably like 9 months before, and he's just looking at me. He's like, what, man? And I'm like, dude, I just came here to tell you I was wrong. I know that night you were scared. You thought everyone died in that car. And then when you tried to help me, I said some profane language to you. You missed a lot of work because of me. And I just wanted to say I was wrong. And is there any way I can make it up to you? And he is like, starts looking at me. And he's like, you know, I'm glad to see you're doing better. And then he started going on this whole thing about how everyone wrestles with demons, and and he's like, you're good, man. He's like, I wrestle with my demons, and I'm not there on a 12-step call, so I ain't even trying to get into that. Like, I'm like, all right, so we're good. And he's like, we're good. And I'm like, cool. And we got back in the car, and I'm like, thanks a lot, Sean. And I'm like, I'm glad I didn't get shot in the face with a shotgun, but it all worked out. But, you know, when I start thinking about this 9th step, man, oh my God, dude, like, it tells me in the book that I have to have a spiritual experience or I am not going to get sober. I did not that night when I went to Norfolk General and I was in the ICU and I was on life support and I woke up that next morning, I didn't have a spiritual experience out of any of that crap. When I started going to meetings, I did not have any spiritual experience out of any of that. When I did my 4th step and my 5th step, I did not have a spiritual experience out of any of that. I was like, oh man, I just unloaded a lot of crap, but it wasn't. And I'm wondering, I'm like, am I gonna even have this thing? Like, is this bullshit? And so, you know, but I just kept doing it because I really didn't even believe these steps worked, to be honest with you. But I just kept doing it. And then we get to 9, and this is it. This is where I had it. And it was like, it's not like, did I have it or didn't I have it? Like, I know without a shadow of a doubt, I remember the time it happened. And you know what? I'll wait till next time to talk about that. Thanks.
The previous paragraph spoke of future opportunities, and my sponsor taught me well as a newcomer about opportunities and that I was going to miss some to be helpful along the way, but that as I progressed, I wanted to make sure that I missed fewer and fewer. And it was about a month after my spiritual awakening and making my amends to my mother that she passed away. And I was very blessed that I was able to go back down there and spend 10 days with her in the hospice, and we said everything that needed to be said. And one of the things she said to me was, she was adamant she didn't want my stepfather's business partner at her funeral. And he was on my resentment list. And I came back a couple of weeks later for the funeral, and he was there. And somehow in my alcoholic mind, I just said, this just doesn't seem like the right time for me to make my amends. And I thought of, you know, I'll get a future opportunity. 3 months later, he and his wife were killed in a drunk driving accident. And it taught me a great lesson. I missed an opportunity to do God's work. And boy, that helped me going forward with the rest of my amends. And you know, God doesn't make too hard of terms with me. I asked for his forgiveness and you know, just kept moving forward. God's always willing to forgive me if I ask. And I bring up that word forgiveness, it says it right there at the end, to be have a helpful and forgiving spirit. And I remember back in about 4 years ago, reading in that first paragraph in step 8 in the 12 and 12, that having cleared away the wreckage of the past, and with my newfound knowledge that I'm meant to have the best possible relations with every human being I know. And that has helped me so much along the way, not just with the eighth and ninth step, but with all the steps. And I take it further that I'm not just may have the best possible relations, but I'm meant to with every person I encounter. And that helps me to avoid some eighth and ninth steps. It doesn't mean I don't have those come up in my life. But you know, when I read that, the hair stood up on my neck because I knew it was talking about my dad. And we had not spoken in 3 years. He had been very helpful to me when I was new, but we had parted ways. And so I knew God was speaking to me, and I didn't know what was to come. But 2 weeks later, I got the phone call. My brother had passed away. And it fell upon me to call my dad and give him the news. God orchestrated to bring my dad and I back together at my brother's funeral, where we were able to make our amends to each other and come to a place of forgiveness. I often hear alcoholics talking about forgiving themselves. This was not something I ever thought about. This came from doing the work in the ninth step. And when I realized I had received God's forgiveness, and I was receiving the grace and forgiveness of those that I approached, that it just came naturally that I would forgive myself. Thank you.
All right. On page 77 again. All right. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell him that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so, never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part, it's water over the dam.
You know, I always think this is sort of funny because for me, like, my enemies, I leave them the hell alone. I stay away from them. I really do. Even when I was drinking, like, I don't like you, then I just block you out of my life and I keep it moving. You know, it always comes back to, like, where the most hurt was for me was with my family. And, like, it's crazy. Like, I leave my enemies alone, but my family, I screw them over, over and over and over again. And, like, why? I don't know. I guess because they loved me too much. So silly. But, you know, and that's where, you know, I had that spiritual awakening was, it was my daughter's mother. And I always, you know, she is a big part of my story. And I'd known her since we were little, like 10 years old. And we grew up together and we had a child together. And she took the brunt of my drinking career. She was there for the most insane things that I can eat. I mean, the stories are ridiculous. But so, you know, we get to this 9th step, and my sponsor, he was like, dude, you gotta fix this immediately. He's like, in 2 weeks, you gotta go down to Florida. And I'm like, really? I'm like, how am I gonna do that? He's like, I don't know, figure it out. And I'm like, okay. And I thought about it for a little bit. And I remember calling him up. And I'm like, dude, I ain't going to Florida. He's like, what do you mean? You said you're going to go to any lengths for victory over alcoholism. What are you talking about? And I'm like, it's not smart for me to go there. She's a married woman. She's married to another man. I do not need to go there and rehash the past with her face to face. I think I need to do this one over the phone. And he was like, wow. He's like, that makes a lot of sense. He's like, you're starting to grow a little bit. I'm like, yeah. And so I called her up. I was driving in my car and I called her up. And I was like, you know, I emotionally, physically, and mentally abused you for years. I forever changed the person that you were going to be. And for that, I was wrong. How can I make it up to you? And I remember saying, I don't know what the hell is going on up there in Virginia. But whatever it is, just keep doing it. And like at that time, what am I doing? I'm going to meetings, talking to new people. I'm reading the book. I'm trying to, you know, get through these steps. And so she told me right then, that's what I got to do. And I remember, you know, that was pretty much the end of the conversation. And she told me she loved me. I told her I loved her. And then she hung up. And I remember pulling over in my car in South Norfolk and that feeling. I was like, wow. Like, it really blew my hair back on that one. I never thought I was going to be able to make that straight, ever. The things that I did to that woman, and the thing is like, I'm still, just because I made that amends with her, doesn't mean that it just automatically made things, like it says it's water over the dam. And yeah, and sometimes when me and her will get in little arguments, I always think about that, like, well, I made that amends, but there's part of it, you know, I forever changed her. When I met her, or when we were growing up and we were little, she used to have like sunflowers all over her room. She used to like listen to Candlebox, and like she was a sweet girl. And like that woman now will cut you with a box cutter and not even think twice about it. She will not. She is just I wouldn't mess with her. And that's what my alcoholism does to people. It changes them, you know? And I have to take responsibility for that. I remember she called me, last year to bond her out of jail because she beat the crap now it was her boyfriend. And she didn't call me, someone else did, but I bonded her right out. And I never even asked for the money back, and I didn't complain about it because I helped make that person the way she is. She is a wonderful mom to my daughter, and I'm just thankful today that we have a relationship. I had to go down there for like a child support hearing. I paid my child support, but we had to go over some numbers in court. And then after court, me and her mom stood outside and we started, you know, talking about the past. And it was like the most healing conversation I've ever had. She gave me like the biggest hug and I'll never forget it. But like, I'm just glad. Like, if this process didn't happen, it would just be me and her fighting for years until my daughter turns 18 and then I'd never talk to her again. But luckily, you know, today we have a relationship. That's it. Thanks.
When I was still in the throes of active alcoholism, I had a neighbor. And I live in the country, in his front yard. His backyard is pretty much right out past my front yard, pretty close, a couple hundred feet from my house. And he had enough room that he bought his son, probably his 8 or 9, bought him a dirt bike. And he ran it constantly out there. And I couldn't even take a nap. And I just built up a resentment about that. And one day I came home from playing golf and I was drunk and I went over and I had a word with the man. And it didn't go over well. And he said, it sounds just like a lawnmower. So my solution was to keep drinking, and at about 5 in the morning when it was still dark, get on my riding lawnmower and go down and start cutting the grass next to his house. And he came out on the back porch and hurled some profanities at me and said he called the police, and I just laughed. Of course, the police came, a couple of them came, and by that time I was back in the house. And I just said, well, I knew I was wrong. I told him what had been going on. And it was just awful to be in a feud. And it just kept escalating. And I tell you, my pencil was hovering over the page before I wrote that name down in my resentment column. When I went with my list to my sponsor, he looked me in the eye and he said, Will, can you just be cordial to him? I said, yeah, I can do that. He said, just be cordial. I think he realized it may cause more injury to the guy or to me. And the guy had moved away by then, but I knew I could find him. But that's all my sponsor asked of me. And boy, when I was let out of that, having to go and with my hat in hand to that man, it really helped me in making progress with the other amends. And now I read a grapevine quote of the day, I don't know, it was a couple of years ago. I haven't seen it recently, but I am never meant to defend or to justify or to rationalize my behavior to anyone. And when I hang up the phone and I hear myself doing that, I can pretty much count on there's an amends in order. And I can spot it pretty quickly now. And so I always do the work when I hear myself doing those things. And it talks here about rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. The progress keeps coming. Like I say, I don't like going with my hat into my hand to anyone and making an amends, but I do it when it's called for it. And it continues. It's going to take me a lifetime with this leveling of the pride. It was my sponsor looked me in the eye at the end of my fifth step and said, that was my problem. And I've asked God to remove that character defect from me, but I still am working on it. And, I believe when I do this work that it helps me to begin to gravitate towards that state we call humility. And that's where God wants me to dwell. And to do his best work, I practice the 11th step, and I do my best to be helpful and forgiving to everyone I encounter. Thank you.
All right, continuing on page 78. Most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us, arranging the best deal we can let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors, no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them.
During my drinking career, I lived under some crazy delusions, some absolutely insane delusions. One was like, I liked to drink and drive when it was raining because I believe cops were lazy and wouldn't get out in the rain. I remember that one. Another one was I would... Some of my escapades would lead to serious injury, and I never really sweat much. And people would be like, and I remember my stepmom, she'd always ask, are you ever going to get health insurance? And I lived under this idea, like, who needs health insurance? I can just go to the emergency room. They have to take care of me. It's a law. And, like, I believed that through and through, and there was many a times that I ended up in that emergency room getting my head stitched and all kinds of other things. And there was other, like, I owed all kinds of money. I remember when I sobered up, I got my credit report and I looked at it and it was horrible. I mean, they wouldn't give me credit for a piece of gum. It was bad. And of course, the first thought that goes through my head, like any good drunk, is like, oh, just go bankrupt. That's, you know, they'll take care of it. And I remember talking with my sponsor and he's like, how about we work on paying them back? And I'm like, man, it's a lot of money. He's like, yeah. He said, but you don't got to pay it back all at once. Why don't you just start some reasonable payments that you can make and make sure you pay it every month. It doesn't matter. You lose your job, you still make that payment. And when we were talking about that, it made me think of like what my dad used to tell me as a kid all the time. You know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And so what happened is I had this little notebook with all the people I owed money, and then like I would write the month under it just to make sure that I never missed anyone every month, and I'd just send out these stack of envelopes with these checks. And little by little, things started to go away. And I mean, they weren't huge payments, $20 here, $50 here, and I just kept doing it over and over. Consistency. I swear it's one of the magical words in Alcoholics Anonymous that I think's way underused. You know, it's like, hey, just for today. Yeah, okay. Consistently doing things, consistently showing up, consistently paying back my debts led to me having decent credit, and then having great credit led to me being able to buy my own house, things that I never thought were possible. But once again, through these steps, you know, it taught me how to manage money, you know, and it also taught me, like, old me, like, I start getting credit cards once my credit gets better. Old me would be like, oh, what? That's $2,000. Let's go spend some money. But, like, because of, like, that consistently have to pay every month and learning, like, the value, because I had no sense of value when I came here. That like, oh no, I don't want to do that because I'm going to have to pay that back. You would think that these are just basic thoughts that people would have. But for me, it took the 12 steps to get around to that. And it worked. It did. It really did. And like, all because of these steps today, like, no matter what happens, lose a job, get another job, have to go a couple weeks, a little bit without money. But, you know, oh, damn, I got credit, and I can use that wisely. Like, stuff's magic. When it told me in this book that, you know, it's going to introduce me to a power that would solve all my problems, and it told me that if I stay close to him and I perform his work well, everything will be taken care of. They didn't lie. It was the truth. And with that, you know, I don't know. I'm forever grateful for those lessons. Thanks.
Remember when my sponsor started reading the fourth step, and the first sentence said, a business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. And the hair stood up on my neck because back in the 90s, I had taken a job with a company as a salesman that took no regular inventory, and my checks were bouncing, and my expenses were 9 months in arrears, and I was gonna get mine. And so I started selling some of the inventory for cash as I visited the different jobs in the area. And my wife would have her pom-poms out when I got home going, how much did you get today? That didn't make it right, but she was my moral compass at the time. And so when my pencil once again was shaking violently before I wrote my business partner today was my boss at the time, and he brought me into the business, and I put his name down on the paper. And it gets more into this in the next paragraph, but I thought at the least I would maybe lose my job, and at the worst I might end up in jail for embezzlement. But I was ready when the time came to make this amends. And I thought back and I came up with the figure of how much I thought I had stolen, and I doubled it. And I put cash in an envelope and I went to the man's house and I sat down with him and I gave him the money and gave him the script. And he looks at me and he looks in the envelope and he says, I hate it when I get money like this. I never know what to do with it. And I said, that ain't my problem. And man, he showed me such grace in that moment. And all my fears were allayed. You know, I'd gotten up that morning and asked God for help. And I asked God to guide my words and my thoughts and my demeanor. And so when I made the amends, I did it with my head up. And I did it with a smile on my face. And he even asked, he said, Will, how were you able to do this? And I said, you didn't take an inventory. He said, well, that was a good point. And he's still my business partner today. I mean, he has shown me such grace and forgiveness over the years. Not only was I an alcoholic, I suffered from severe depression and couldn't work for 2 years, and he stood by me. You know, I am blessed to have many, many people like this in my life. I didn't deserve it, but God had a plan for me. And these people have stayed in my life, and it's a very important part of my recovery. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, the last reading is on page 79. Although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
When I started working with my sponsor, we'd start going through this book, and I'm doing well. So I'm following the directions, and I get a phone call from my probation officer, and he says, you know, there's a warrant that came up out of Florida. You need to go turn yourself in at the sheriff's department. And I'm like, oh, no, 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 no. And I called up my sponsor, and I remember telling him, I'm like, dude, I'm wanted out of Florida now. And I mean, I had quite a little legal spider web going on here. But he's like, well, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to get extradited. Part of me tells me I should just run, just get out of here. I've never tried the West Coast. So... And I mean, that's my thing. I've been running since I was a little kid. I remember when I started going to court for the first time in like a suit, when all this was taking place, and I'm like, what am I doing? This is for suckas. Suckas go to court, dude. You know, because you might end up going to jail. Why would you show up to court? Catch me when you catch me. And so me and him talked, and I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to be extradited. I'm like, I'm gonna go talk to my parents. And I guess I'm going to see if they'll drive me down to Florida, or I'll take a bus or something. And he's like, wow, that's impressive. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. gonna keep doing it. And I mean, I was wanted down there for some good things, some things that could have put me in the DOC in Florida. And so I talked to my parents, and they're like, we'll drive you. And I didn't call back my probation officer because I knew he wanted me to go to the Chesapeake City Jail, or the Chesapeake County Sheriff. So me and my parents, we hopped in a vehicle and we drove down to Florida, and I turned myself in. I got a lawyer when I was down there, and it's actually, there's a couple things that happened out of that situation. We started, like I said, me and my sponsor had already started reading the book, but it really, I mean, I'm just listening. It wasn't really sticking. Like, I didn't have this massive love for the big book that I have today. But I turned myself in, not knowing if I'm going to end up in the DOC for a couple of years, scared out of my mind. And my parents sent me a book through Amazon. It was the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was on a boat on the floor in the Osceola County Jail. And the book came, and I started reading it in that cell. And I remember I was reading Bill's story, and I'd read it before with Bobby. And that night when I was reading in that cell, I was like, holy shit, I'm Bill. I'm Bill. It like just came to me like that right then was like my, like where I had my love affair with the big book. But you know, I mean, there was some things in early sobriety that I did that I don't know how I did it. I really don't. It just went against every grain of my being to like go and turn myself in, go and show up to court, go and talk to this guy, make this amends. Like it was all God. Like someone was pushing me, gently pushing me. And I went down to Florida, and they gave me a deal so good that it was ridiculous. I was scared that if I went back and told people in county the deal I got, they were going to think I was a rat. So I just kept it to myself, did my little 30-day bid. My parents had a town car waiting outside for me. It picked me up. I jumped on an airplane at Orlando International. Flew back here after I was only locked up for 30 days. Flew back here, and me and Bobby were in a meeting that night. And I was like, wow, maybe this stuff does work. Like, holy, like, I thought I was just going to end up in the Florida State Prison. And look at me, I'm already back. That's all taken care of. And, you know, that gave me a little bit more to just keep on moving, keep on going through this. That's all I got. Thanks, guys, for having me.
One of the blessings in my life has been to be involved in the AA service structure. What a ton of opportunities for growth. And boy, we get a lot of people pointing out where you're falling short. And I learned that I had to just smile and just say, thank you, I need all the help I can get. Boy, there's some growth there. And and not to overreact. And to be a diffusing person, not to throw fuel on what's already just started. And so this morning I got up, I was up early, and I read through this material to begin to be prepared. And I went to a beautiful park where I power walk at sunrise this morning. It was 58 degrees. I even put my little jacket on. And I was like, thank you, God. The humidity has been killing me. And then I just let this flow into me. This is how God works in my life when I practice the 11th step. And I referred to this earlier, when I practice the 11th step, I'm going to have to do fewer 4th and 5th steps and fewer 8th and 9th steps. I'm very fortunate that God has set my life up in such a way that I'm able to devote time to the 11th step. And it helps me to know which step I'm supposed to be on. And, you know, as wonderful as my life is, I fall far short of what God would have me be today. And I see that when I fall short, and I just say to God, I'll do better. Thank you.
All right, let's thank the panel. All right, the baskets are being passed. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Announcements. Are there any AA-related announcements?
I'm a gentleman out of Port. The end of October, last weekend of October, Visky Pod's coming to town. It's going to be down in Virginia Beach. It's Visky Pod's on the people in Mount Park Synonymous. It's going to be at the Holiday Inn on 39th Street. We're going to have a bunch of speakers, fellowship, dance, the whole nine yards. So come on down, join us. Rooms are $99 a night, all that good stuff. So. And you can find us on the website, Visky Pod 2018.
Thanks. I see you back there.
Hello, I'm Robert. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Robert.
I have a few numbers I'll be glad to share with you if you would like to attend the Visky Pod conference. I have a number of your local community service. And you can meet me after the meeting and talk about that. So we can develop. Looking forward to a great conference at the end of the month.
Thanks. Hey, anybody else? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands?
All
right. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
My name is Linda. I'm not
home. Hey, Linda, welcome. Hey, Katie, welcome. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Danny, welcome.
Danny, welcome.
You got this.
Hey, welcome. Amber, welcome.
I know there's got to be one more. There we go.
Welcome.
Hey, Ron, welcome.
Is that everybody? Sure. Literature is available to my left. Please see a home group member after the meeting if you would like to purchase any literature. I guess there's no pamphlets, but it's free if you can fold it. All right, sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have any questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be at this table after the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminders. Smokers, please use the buck can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank the panel one more time. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial. If you hit the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. All right. I've asked a friend to read the last two paragraphs on 164. Who'd like to volunteer?
First.
Hey, Taylor.
Great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us.
we have a nice way of closing.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For thine is the kingdom,